America.
Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in.
Or don't.
Or don't.
This is Michael Dean. If you know us, you can Skype in. If you know us, because if you know us and you have, if we have you on Skype, that means that you have a good mic and we know you're smart. And that's
we're looking out for the listeners by not letting them call in.
Such horrible radio, man. I love it. How you doing, Davi Barker?
I'm excellent. Hey, Michael, I got a philosophical question.
Okay.
If you're the iron hamster.
Yeah.
And you have a hamster running around in your brain. How many hamsters, how far down does it go? Are there hamsters inside the hamster's brain running around? Is it hamsters all the way down?
We're through the looking glass here, people. There are hamsters within hamsters within hamsters. My hamsters go up to 11, up to the 11th dimension.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm the iron hamster, and I think it was you or somebody said that's the reason that my blood test came back with too much iron, and I have to cut down on iron. Yeah, because I'm the iron hamster. It's seeping into – the iron hamster in my brain is seeping into my blood.
So how you doing?
I am excellent. I'm excellent, and, you know, it's another day above ground, and it's another day where we're not in the FEMA camps, and we're not in prison for something stupid we didn't do. You know, I was reading about your buddy, the Bitcoin Jesus, Mr. Veer. What's his name?
Roger Ver.
Yeah, I was reading his website yesterday, and he got like, thrown in prison for selling like some kind of firecracker that like even Cabela's was selling that's for farmers to scare away deer. And they just gave everyone else a cease and desist. But he said that he ended up serving like 9 or 10 months in federal prison. And it was, he said it was, do you know about this?
I have not heard this story.
Yeah, it's on his website. And he said it was because before he was a full-on voluntarist, he was part of the Libertarian Party, and he was part of a debate at his college between, it was a, you know, Democrat or Republican and him. And he said that taxation is theft and that the ATF are jackbooted thugs who murder people. And it turned out there were, according to him, there were some ATF agents in the audience. And he said they went on a systematic persecution of him. Everybody else that was selling this weird little firecracker for scaring away deer got a cease and desist letter from the government. And he got federally prosecuted. And he said that at some point in his prosecution, that one of the ATF agents was there, like in the room, pushing the prosecutor, the federal attorney,
serving as a character witness.
Yes, yeah, saying
this guy doesn't like taxes.
Yeah, saying you should have heard what this guy said. You got to go for the, you know, full Monty. Or
wow.
Whatever. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know enough about this particular story, but I know Roger's from my area, and one of the interesting things about this, I guess county, it's multiple counties, but around 4th of July, the cities here have, I swear this is collusion, they are checkerboarded so that firecrackers are banned in one and sold in another, and then banned in the next town, and then sold in the next town. So literally, like driving to work, I would pass by signs that said, fireworks are strictly verboten, and then a fireworks stand, and then another sign that said they were forbidden, and then a fireworks stand. And I think this is about revenue generation, although in this case it sounds like it was about selective prosecution.
Yeah, you know, Wyoming is by all accounts kind of a square place in a lot of ways, which is probably part of why I live here. You know, I don't smoke weed and I don't party and, you know, all the things that worked for me when I was younger and lived in San Francisco don't work anymore. So I, you know, I live here cause, you know, you can carry around a gun and, taxes are pretty low, but in some ways this is like LibPair, especially compared to Utah, which is Utah borders Wyoming, like the two corners, they barely touch, but, when you come in from the Utah corner into Wyoming, all of a sudden, like there's a parking lot there with a mall that has three fireworks stores, like three liquor stores and three porno stores.
That kind of sounds like Sacramento. Sacramento is weird because like pretty much everything is Walmart, but there are certain things Walmart won't sell. So driving around in Sacramento is like Walmart, liquor store, pornography store, comic book store, Walmart, pornography store, liquor store, comic book store. And it's just like, it's like a pattern.
Man, I haven't spent a lot of time in Sacramento. The last time I was in Sacramento, probably I think it was the only time I was in Sacramento, was going to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers and having backstage passes. Not only backstage passes, I was sitting on the stage leaning against Flea's bass amp during the whole show. It was about the coolest vantage point I've ever had for a show.
I saw them play live at the Shoreline in California.
The Shoreline. Maybe we're at the same show. That's
pretty amazing. I don't know the date.
Was the opening band called The Bicycle Thief?
I have no idea.
When I saw him, it was the opening band was The Bicycle Thief, whose guitar player is now the guitar player in the Chili Peppers. And the opening band was, what was that band? They had that song, Hey Man, Nice Shot.
Oh, Filter. Yeah. That might have been the same show. I remember seeing Filter played that show too.
We were at the same show, man, because that was the only tour. They played the whole tour with him, but they didn't play any other tours with him. They were kind of a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, I went to see Filter. I wasn't that much of a Peppers fan until I saw them.
They were great. That was a really great show, too. Amazing show. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. You and I were at the same... You and I shared an experience with 15,000 other people. How unique is that?
We might have even like bumped into each other or spilled a beer on each other or something.
I also saw Ozzy at the Shoreline, and it was a much angrier crowd, man. It was like...
I may have been at that show, too.
There were people like walking around, bumping into each other, trying to get into fights. I remember that.
Yeah, you know, that one, there's another sort of funny coincidence with that one was I got into like a mosh pit at that one and I happened to like smack into this guy head first and I bloodied up my face. And so I made my way out of the mosh pit and made it back to the group I was hanging out with. And I ran into my roommate, Dan, who was also covered in blood. And it turns out that his head is the head that I banged into.
Oh, Ozzy and his shows. Yeah. I also saw the Sex Pistols at the Shoreline.
I've never seen the Sex Pistols.
It was their like reunion tour, you know, like 15, 20 years after they broke up or something. They got back with their original bass player, Glenn Matlock, who they'd kicked out of the band supposedly for being too good and replaced him with Sid Vicious, who later died in a murder-suicide, I think, or OD'd or something. I don't know. Killed his girlfriend and then...
The first concert I've ever been to was at the Shoreline. It was Stevie Nicks.
You know, today's Stevie Nicks' birthday.
And is it really?
It is. It's Stevie Nicks' birthday.
Coincidence abound.
And it's also, she was born in 1948, May 26th today. But it's also Miles Davis's birthday. And I think people are really psyched about it because all over my neighborhood, people have been having barbecues today. So I think there's a lot of jazz fans in Wyoming here.
That's interesting. I mean, how do you know if they're celebrating Miles Davis or Stevie Nicks?
Oh, because Miles Davis is so much cooler. But, you know, since it's considered a kind of backwards place, they're probably celebrating Stevie Nicks.
So the Stevie Nicks concert was also the first time I ever encountered the, like, sign-waving, like, sinners burning in hell crowd. Because really? They thought that Stevie Nicks was a witch. And so they had to show up and let us know that we were participating in witchcraft if we went to that concert.
Yeah. She's so not scary, man.
No, not really. I think it was something to do with the way she dressed, maybe, or maybe she has a song about being a witch or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. They're sort of paranoid. They seem to want to show up whenever they can make any sort of loose connection.
There's a Christian lady now who's on YouTube and has quite a following, who kind of dresses like Stevie Nicks. And I've heard, I forget her name, but she's got kind of reddish, you know, she's probably 40 something. She's sometimes on there with her two little girls and, she's usually out on the desert preaching and they're actually pretty well produced, you know, for no budget. I got to give her that. The audio's good. And I'm such a fan of good audio in videos on YouTube that, I got to give her that, but it's kind of funny because a lot of the comments from Christians complaining about this Christian preacher woman are that she dresses like a prostitute or a witch.
Okay.
She just kind of looks kind of hippie to me, but you know, I guess that means,
well, you know, it just goes to show that it takes all kinds and Christianity is a really kind of diverse crowd. So you can't make assumptions about them based on the sign waivers. Yeah. There's, you know, Christian rock bands and Christian punks and
you know,
runs the gamut.
You know,
there's Christian prostitutes.
Probably. Do you know of any?
Not personally.
You know who used to be a, I'm going to out somebody here. You know who used to be a roadie for a long time for a Christian rock band was Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I guess Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, is technically some flavor of Christian, although Quakers aren't generally considered real Christians by a lot of, you know, mainstream Protestant or Catholic Christians, and Ben isn't considered a good Quaker by a lot of Quakers, so he's a subset of a subset of Christians, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that being a bad Quaker puts him, like, one step closer to Protestantism than conventional Quakerism, because mainline Protestantism is not pacifist, and that's what makes him a bad Quaker.
Well, mainline, Ben's can, okay, he calls himself a bad Quaker because he carries a gun, and Quakers aren't supposed to carry guns, but he's actually more of a hardline old school Quaker than a lot of Quakers now, from what he tells me and from what I've studied on it, because Quakers originally were anti-state, and they were he said a lot of them now are really socialist and like really statist and want to use the state to institute and enforce charity, which isn't really charity. And that's very that's very against the original Quaker Church. They were the first like organized anti-war protesters in America and
tax protesters.
Yeah. And what else? They were early on in the anti-slavery movement. He does do some things that a lot of Quakers do, but I do that too. Like, he doesn't really celebrate. I guess I celebrate days. Like, I made a big deal of my 50th birthday, but I don't do anything special on Christmas or Thanksgiving or, you know, generally. And Quakers do not acknowledge special days. They believe it's ungodly or something to stress one day over another.
Yeah, I can kind of understand that. I grew up next to some Jehovah's Witnesses, and they had the same sort of attitude. And so, you know, birthdays and Halloweens and things that were sort of a big deal to my family, they sort of disappeared and hid in their homes, and waited for us heathens to finish with our our jubilation.
Jubilation. I like that word. I'm feeling jubilant tonight. And we'll be back.
Absolutely.
We'll be back with more jubilation on the Freedom Fiends, celebrating Miles Davis's birthday and having barbecues. We'll be back.
Words.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm speaking directly to you. Yes, you.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
This is the Freedom Fiends, squishing directly into your ear hole over the inner tubes in a fabulous feast of worms, a diet of worms that keeps you healthy.
A diet of worms.
Yeah.
Your daily diet of worms.
Yes, your U.S. Libertarian RDA of worms. So we were talking about the hero's journey last night, and I got a couple follow-ups. One is that if you want to know a lot about filmmaking on no budget money, you can get my book, $30 Film School, and you don't even have to go spend $30 on it, because somebody, I don't know who, put it up in the RSS torrent feed archive last week, the one that went out yesterday. So if you're torrenting the Freedom Fiends, you have the RSS feed, and you have the giant 15-megabyte PDF of $30 Film School. And you also, the day before that, or the one before that on the feed, on the old-school blockchain, the antique blockchain of the RSS feed of the BitTorrents, is my first novel, Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women, which both of the first book, $30 Film School, tells you a lot about the hero's journey. And the second one, which was actually the first one, has a hero's journey that ends in death and sainthood. No, not sainthood. So we're going to talk later about the Church of St. John Coltrane. But I wanted to follow up, too. We talked about Stefan Molyneux and how he says that the hero's journey is false, and it makes people look for you know, permission to be heroic. And I just think that's old curmudgeonness. And I like a lot about Stefan Molyneux, but occasionally he just has to be so contrary. He has to hate everything that's normal, I think. I think he has oppositional defiant disorder. And don't we all to some degree? But here's the thing. I said, and I conjectured, and I put forth that even though he hates the hero's journey, his speeches, his talks, any talk he gives, whether it's on a podcast or whether it's especially the ones he gives in front of an audience where he's planning it out a little bit, they have a hero's journey. They have a three-act format. They have a character arc. And I thought about this after we got off the interwebs yesterday. And what I realized is I figured out who the hero is in his hero's journey. You know who it is, Davi? Can you guess?
It's is it me?
No, it's him.
It's him. He's the hero in his own story.
Yeah. Well, there's actually three heroes in his hero's journey. It's either Stefan Molyneux or the listener or
so me.
Or yeah, you. Or or Liberty. Or like Libpear. You know?
Yeah. I mean that would make sense because his real criticism of the hero's journey is he thinks that it demotivates heroic impulses in people by telling them that they need a mentor and they need to be called. And so he might think of himself as that person. He might, in his mind, be the Obi-Wan Kenobi that calls us heroism.
He calls a lot of people to change. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it also, like, his background is in theater, among his other sort of degrees in history and philosophy and things. He spent a lot of time writing novels and in theater. So I'm sure a lot of those sort of literary devices are known to him, and I'm sure it's intentional the way that he speaks.
Yeah.
No, that's good. If you can use the sort of devices of the old paradigm to your advantage, I think that's fine.
Yep. I just think he's in denial, thinking that criticizing the hero's journey outright because he's not realizing that he literally opens his mouth and hero's journey comes out.
Well, I mean, maybe the hero's journey is the kind of thing where it can be projected onto anything. Maybe there's no way of getting out of it.
It can't be. It cannot be. I'm not looking for something and finding it just because I want to look for it. There are definitely stories that don't have a hero's journey, and they're usually not very good stories. Again, you know, you had the question of, is this in stories because it's natural in humans, or is it just something that people came up with and it's become so cliche that people don't like a story if it doesn't have it? I don't know which, and I kind of think it might be the latter, whereas I think that, you know, a drumbeat in 4/4 being something people like is because it's innate in, you know, walking, making love, and your heartbeat.
You know, I was thinking about this part of it after we talked, and I don't know why this didn't like smack us in the face as totally obvious, but I mean, it does happen in nature. It happened to Malcolm X. It happened to Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, these are people whose lives are, you can at least tell them in the form of a hero's journey, right? So,
well, a lot of times in biopics, you know, biographical pictures, which I'm a huge fan of biopics. I'll watch a biopic about anybody. I saw one coming out today about the Four Tops or somebody. It was some like old 60s pop band. And I was like, I'm going to watch that, you know, and it certainly helped that it's directed by Mr. Make My Day. What's his name? You know, cowboy.
Make My Clint Day. Eastwood. No Clint New Eastwood. Taxes.
Oh, no, Clint Eastwood. Yeah. Who has a libertarian bent, but he's still kind of stuck in the state. But usually they try to wrap a lot more hero's journey around someone's life than it had.
Sure.
Yeah. But you know, any rock band can go into a hero's journey, especially since someone usually ODs and then resurrects. Behind the music.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah. I just received some breaking news over the wire. There's a recommendation from the Libertarian Scientists Department of the Americas, and they're recommending that people do not put copper sulfate down the toilet to deal with roots in your sewer line. Apparently, it can get sucked up into trees and turn them into lightning rods. So I don't know what this is about, but yeah, don't do it, people.
Wait, people put copper sulfate? Is that what you said?
Yeah, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, does.
Down your. Well, he lives in an RV.
he has a house somewhere.
Okay.
He lives. He drives around the country in a van with his wife, solving mysteries.
Yeah, it's the mystery mobile or whatever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the idea is that the copper, what, it destroys a stump you're trying to remove?
What's the idea? I guess people use it because, you know, in old sewer lines, the old sewer lines weren't made of like PVC. They were made of clay or actually like rolled up tar paper. And, you know, after 40, 50 years, roots can get through into there, and they really aggressively, you know, cause sewage is, you know, roots. Yeah. Hey, fertilizer and water. Great. And, tree roots get in there, and, you know, you basically, you have to have the whole thing replaced, but it costs a lot of money. So people do, you know, they have Roto-Rooter come out once a year, I've heard. And, you know, when they're failing that, they, as maintenance, they'll put, you know, copper sulfate, which I guess, you know, this press release says you can buy it cheap on Amazon and dump it down your toilet, but you shouldn't do it because it's highly electrically conductive. It gets sucked up into trees and somehow turns them into lightning rods. That's just crazy. I don't know what these people are talking about, but it says here the Libertarian Scientists Association of the Americas says you shouldn't put it down your toilet because it turns trees into lightning rods for some reason. I wouldn't know anything about that.
Well, trees kind of already are lightning rods in a sense. They're like nature's lightning rods.
Yeah.
Because they channel the electricity like from – I mean, if you ever look at video of trees getting struck by lightning in slow motion, the electricity like bolts down the center and then spreads out through the root structure and dissipates into the ground.
Yeah.
But,
and that's when the roots aren't – the roots and the tree are,
that's when
aren't
the roots saturated, are not
saturated with a highly conductive electrolyte. Yeah.
Maybe there's a – maybe, you know, maybe there's a recipe for a natural battery here somewhere.
I don't know. I don't know anything about trees or electricity or lightning. I'm just reading what this press release says. So let's move on.
Maybe if you put the right conductive metals down your drain, your trees will become electrical generators.
And you'll get magical powers to fight the state with your mind.
And if you believe that, I have a tinfoil hat to sell you.
You know, I have an ongoing fantasy that's kind of my, you know, savior fantasy. I don't know if you've heard me talk about it, but it involves Alpha Centauri and radio waves.
Heard this story. Yeah. No, go for it. I want to hear it again.
And I'm thinking,
tell me a story, Michael.
I'm thinking, you know, somebody should write a novel of this. And I don't write novels anymore, but if there's anyone out there or on this show who writes novels, I'll sell you this plot line for a tenth of a Bitcoin. Basically, the plot line is, well, the fantasy is, the fact is that AM radio transmissions leak into space and are detectable from space. And who knows how far they can go before the signal to noise ratio would be so much that nothing could be heard in them. And, you know, who knows with advanced technology if that could be read at an almost infinite distance. And the nearest planet that is possibly habitable is in the Alpha Centauri region, which is 4.5 light years away. I've been on radio for a little over a year now. And so maybe, you know, 3.5, it takes 4.5 years for radio waves to go 4.5 light years. So in 3.5 years, it's possible that the first Freedom Fiends will finally reach that planet. And if it is habitable, they may say, you know, we've been listening to this planet's radio and TV broadcasts for, you know, 75 or 100 years, and this is the first intelligent life we've heard. We're going to go down and find this Michael Dean guy and give him our advanced technology to put a big dome of, you know, 11th dimensional protection between him and the state for him and all his friends.
And, you know, that sounds a lot like a story that I did write, or I am in the process of writing. I call it Pirate Bay, but it's B-E-I-G-H, like the Turkish name. And what's going on in this world is all alien species, or at least all advanced species, are part of a sort of intergalactic trade federation. And they have sort of market protocols to decide which sorts of species they'll trade with. And they've decided humans are just too aggressive to trade with.
Yeah.
But the Pirate Bay is sort of on the fringe of the Trade Federation, and he seeks out sort of planets that are on the cusp and looks for libertarian-minded people on that planet to trade with. And so he comes. He visits Somalia because in this story, Somalia is sort of a tech center. And so he finds a young boy named Hakim who has the right sort of brainwaves, and starts looking for using Hakim to help him find other enlightened beings on Earth.
Yeah, well, in my story, it would just basically be I get to be the libertarian emperor of the Earth and decide who gets saved from the state.
Sort of like Cocoon.
I don't know that one. Tell me.
Cocoon is a great movie. It's alien pods sort of descend, and they I don't even remember how they got there, but somehow they got into the pool of a retirement home, and the people that begin swimming in the pool with the cocoons begin having these sort of miraculous healings, and they become young again. And then when the cocoons hatch, they reveal that they're like this alien species, and they give the old people the opportunity to like leave the planet and become part of this sort of celestial eternal youth society. It's really great. It's sort of in the same vein as Batteries Not Included. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. It's sort of, you know, it's part of that, like, there were some sci-fi movies in the 80s and 90s that were really about life in the present being visited by advanced civilizations, as opposed to sci-fi that's set in a future advanced
I would prefer the present. You know, yeah. The things that I like in stories, and this goes for movies as well as books, but not so much with cartoons. You can break all this with cartoons, and I still like it. But basically, most of the stories I really love have a few things in common. They are they take place in the not too distant past to the not too distant future, somewhere between like, you know, 1920 and maybe 50 years from now in the future. They take place on Earth. They don't involve any magic, but they can involve advanced technology, which can almost seem like magic. They have small casts. Ensemble casts, like they don't have a single star. They have, you know, like five main characters or six main characters interacting interestingly together. Let's see. No magic. Yeah, that's about it, I think.
Does a liberty theme have to be there, or can you tolerate some statism in your movies?
I have some ability for suspension of statism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And mine's getting less and less all the time. Sometimes I can take it, and then sometimes I can't.
Yeah, it's really disconcerting to me because some of the best drama on TV is cop shows. And I don't mean like the show Cops. I mean dramas about cops.
Like Law and Order.
Yeah, because they have some of the best writers seem to end up in cop shows. I don't know why, but I really liked The Shield. You know, I really liked, I don't know, but it's hard. I like Southland, but it's really hard for me to like those now because the guys you're supposed to like, and remember I said yesterday that for a story to be good, you have to care about what happens to the heroes. The cops, you know, they're always busting people for drugs. Even on Law and Order, you should be able to like because they're only going after murderers and rapists. They're not going after...
Yeah, but
you know,
Law and Order is like a long diatribe on how to circumvent the Constitution. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is.
You know,
it's how do we get around this pesky process so we can throw the rapist in jail.
Yes, and every third episode, there's a scene where Stabler is interrogating a guy in the interrogation room, and he starts...
Stabler, what a name.
And he starts beating him up, and, you know, Olivia pulls him off him and says, hey, there's cameras in here, you know.
Right.
Although
it's bad cop and goes too far cop.
Yeah, yeah. Bad cop and worse cop. Yeah. And in the Shield, they would just unplug the camera feed in the room when they were about
really?
To.
Really? I never watched The Shield.
The Shield was amazing. The Shield was amazing. And it was also amazing to me because it took place in my neighborhood in L.A. You know, like most stuff in L.A. is in Hollywood and the nice parts of L.A. and really, you know, Brentwood or whatever. And it's really fancy and slick. And The Shield was really gritty. It was done like documentary style, like with handheld 16mm film cameras, really small crews. And there's a lot of like running in it, you know, like literally running and like. Literally, like every episode, there'd be, you know, a scene in a restaurant that I'd eaten in that week. And there were also a lot of extras in it that were people I knew from AA meetings. You know, like,
wow, that's trippy.
So it was kind of like entering this weird version of my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was, I forget what it was. There was a movie that was set in my high school. And it was filmed like the year before I got
Fast
there.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
No. It was, it was like Disturbing Behavior or something like that. The plot of the movie was that the teenagers or the disgruntled students were sort of put into this special behavior sort of behavior modification program. And what it turned out they were doing was they were drilling and putting probes in their brain that made them into Stepford Wife students. And they called them the Blue Ribbons. And the Blue Ribbons were these weird like robot students that were always getting straight A's and always playing the right football.
So it was basically like a low-tech mechanical version of psych meds that they give students all the time anyway. Do you know 10% of Americans are on psych meds?
Man, that's depressing.
That makes
I might need some medication.
Okay, sorry. Go on.
The long story short is the bad students end up the last ones who are not robots, and they have to sort of catch the faculty in the act and turn off the mind control machine. And anyway, it was weird because it was my high school, and so it was like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
What was your high school?
But this was at Redwood High School in Larkspur and Marin. I also went to Santa Clara High School in Santa Clara, but I graduated from Redwood High School, and which is incidentally where John Walker Lind went. But
the American Taliban guy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was he older than you? You didn't know him, did you?
I didn't know him, but we were in the same graduating class.
Huh. I went to college with Natalie Merchant from the 10,000 Maniacs.
Yeah, it's also where Robin Williams went. They asked Robin Williams to come and speak. This wasn't when I was there, but they asked him to come and speak as an alumni of my high school. And the speech he gave was essentially, yeah, you kids are in prison. You're better off dropping out.
Wow, that's awesome. But he's still an Obama-licking statist.
Oh, wait, hey, he's from Hollywood.
You know what else happened on this day? In 1908, the first oil well was drilled in the Middle East. And it was immediately acquired by the Anglo-Persian Oil Company, which later became BP. So, yeah, you have a picnic and celebrate that.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Michael Dean After Dark.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons.
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, there's some Squisklar Squig Elves from Death Clocks, and UM's listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the... You know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
And you know that went out on the air. Perverse for other reasons with the Freedom Fiends. You like how I saved that one? You know... People would probably love to be an ant on the wall and see what goes on during the breaks here. The things we talk about, you know, it's like Bob.
And for a price, they can be.
That should be the premium channel. Yeah, you get to hear. You know, it's the quote from Bob Dylan comes to mind. If my thought dreams could be seen, they'd probably put my head in a guillotine.
So where are we going?
Church of God, John Coltrane, or you got some news there?
I don't know. News isn't really that interesting.
I want to talk more about the ANCOMs, you know, the anarcho-capitalists, the ones or anarcho that no, we're the anarcho-capitalists, the anarcho-communists, the ones that hate us and say we're not real anarchists. They say that they have a patent on anarchy and that capitalism, even without the state, is fascism and couldn't be pure.
Well, yeah, you know, they homesteaded the word.
Well, they had it first. They did have it first. Although
I would like to dispute that. I have heard that there are individualist and market anarchists all the way back, but I haven't done enough research to figure it out. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Although, so what?
The word liberal used to mean anarcho-capitalist back in the day, basically. Classic liberal. Yeah.
So, I mean, words are words.
And the liberals stole it.
They change all the time. That's fine. Doesn't matter. You have to come up with words that describe reality, not reality that, you know, conforms to the words you have. So,
well, Lao Tzu was an anarchist, basically.
I've had them look me in the face and tell me that I don't exist, which is sort of funny.
You've had who tell you that?
Like anarcho-communists. I'll say, oh, yeah, I'm all right there on board with you. I sort of lean the more capitalist like variety, and they look me in the face, and they scream, you don't exist, and they run really? Away.
That's their way of saying it? They're not saying that your beliefs are false. They're saying you don't exist.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really delusional. And, you know, we were talking about thick and thin libertarians the other day. You know, thin libertarians are people like us who, you know, the only thing we really care about is the non-aggression principle, and everything else is just window dressing. And, you know, we do have thin libertarians, you and I at least, do have other passions. And, you know, I wouldn't be good friends with someone who's a racist. Although, you know, I wouldn't be friends with somebody who's mean to women, but I'm probably someone that some hardcore hardliner ultra feminist would consider a sexist.
Well, yeah, because you're male.
Because I'm male. Or even ones that aren't that far, not the ones that just want to castrate all men. But, you know.
I was speaking of the whole feminist thing. I was reading a thread today that was essentially a woman claiming that white women can't be raped because they are privileged. Only colored women can be raped. Man. Like, that's how insane this discussion gets when people go down that rabbit hole.
And this woman's a feminist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, crazy people. Crazy.
Well, this is a feminist who's also a privilege preacher, right? So she's combined these two ideas. The idea, like, for the privilege preachers is that white people can't experience racism because they're from the privileged class. And so this woman has taken that idea and applied it to white women and said that white women, they can be sexually assaulted the same way white people can be racially discriminated against, but they can't be raped the same way that white people can't experience racism.
That's so sick,
like,
man.
It's totally insane. Like, I don't so understand sick. How anybody can have this stuff fall out of their head.
Yeah, and Ann Combs, in my experience, the hundreds of them I've met and broken bread with, all of them have other agendas that are as important as their anarchism to them. A lot of them, you basically have to be an outwardly adamant feminist. You have to, what are the other things? You know, you've hung out at Occupy Wall Street and tried to sway them otherwise.
Oh yeah. You know, maybe it's vegetarianism. Maybe it's feminism.
Animal rights.
Nativism. Maybe animal it's, rights. You know, whatever.
Interesting though, in Europe, when I was touring with my film DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, and staying in a lot of ANCOM squats, here's what I noticed. They're all feminists, but the women all cook the meals. I found that kind of interesting.
That's odd. I mean, I've definitely observed that.
Especially like in France, where like there's such a tradition of men who are chefs and trained in it. You know, they still got the women cooking. We'll be back with hour two.
Listen to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
È stato sperimentato.
The United States government presents
No Vision.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Esto por su parte considera
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet,
doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Is Mr. Michael Dean, hour two of the celebration, May 26th. It's actually May 27th now where I am. It just passed the cusp of days, but we were celebrating Miles Davis's birthday, and apparently my neighbors all were too, because they were all having barbecues and had relatives over and just were having a big old time and singing.
A lot of Miles Davis fans out there.
Apparently, yeah, I guess so. You know, I remember this time last year too. I think it's a holiday too, like Monday. I don't think anyone worked today, and I think everyone takes the day off to celebrate Miles Davis's birthday. And we do want to thank Miles Davis for his service. Yeah, man. He made some great smacked out jazz music that really rocked. And I want to read a fan letter. I guess I don't like using that word. It sounds like it separates me from them. I got a fiend letter. How's that?
There you go.
I got a fiend letter today. And I asked this guy to post it on the site. He hasn't yet, but I will, you know, I guess he doesn't live in front of a computer like Davi and I. But I really like what he wrote. His name is Josh, and he said, "Happy birthday. Your wife telling the story of lightning was cool. She has a very smooth and well-structured voice. You should do a similar segment every once in a while. Also, I don't want to blow too much smoke up your butt. Make that radio friendly, but you're doing a great job keeping the fiends interesting in Nima's absence." That is awesome. Thank you, Josh.
I don't take that as a compliment.
Josh in Dallas. Yeah, Davi Barker is one of the reasons for that. And there's 9 other reasons for that. And they're all people who've chipped in and helped out and like to be on one radio station on the border of Illinois and Kentucky. And we like that radio station. It's a good thing.
I kind of wish there was a transition period. I've never been on the air with Nima.
Huh. Well, maybe we should interview him sometime.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe he's got parenting tips or something.
Maybe. Yeah. I tried to, I called his little brother the other day to see if he wanted to be a fill-in alternate co-host. His brother, Frank, he's one of us. He's an ANCAP. He sounds a little like Nima. You know, I'm not trying to replace Nima, but I was like, yeah, we've had that guy on before and he's good, Frank. But Frank's an electrician now. And I called him at like, oh, I don't know. It was like 8:30 PM my time, 9:30 PM his time. And I woke him up. Like, he has to get up at 4 AM. So I don't think he's going to want to be doing a show in the middle of the night.
We're joined now by my cat, Fiasco, who has decided to join the party.
Oh, I want a picture of your cat. I've never seen a picture of your cat, Fiasco. Do you have any?
I have some. Yeah, I can send them to you.
Yeah.
He's a little nervous. I did a lot of cleaning today, and whenever I move furniture, it's like he feels like he's in a strange place, and so he's sort of hanging around pretty close to me today.
Yeah, yeah. I'll send you some pictures of Fuzzy. Have you ever seen Fuzzy?
I think so.
Fuzzy usually has his
tongue. Is that orange cat?
No. Fuzzy usually has his tongue out, which is pretty awesome. No, the orange and white cat is Peanut. That's Fuzzy's brother. They're both They're both Maine Coon mutts, and they're really furry. Fuzzy has big paws, as you can see in this picture. He kind of looks like a...
Okay.
Looks like
Fiasco's a tuxedo cat.
Oh, he's not a Hitler cat, is he?
No, not a Hitler cat, just a tuxedo cat.
Have you
ever
seen that site? It's like catsthatlooklikehitler.com or something.
It's Charlie Chapman cats, aren't they?
Charlie Chaplin cats. There you go. Yeah. So we have a couple lists we're going to go through in the grand tradition of Free Talk Live. Although we won't be interrupted by people calling in on scratchy cell phones, interrupting the train of thought. So we'll actually get through the list. Free Talk Live's good. They have a good service. They let people call in and talk no matter what. We don't do that. We don't care what people have to say. This is a one-way conversation. It's two on one. It's Davi and I on you, the listener.
Yeah.
Yeah. So listen.
Well, you know, their show gets kind of hijacked by callers from time to time.
Yeah, it does.
Too.
Like, you know, and they've got this ongoing beef with this one caller that's horrible. Why do they take? Yeah, Whit. Why do they take?
Whatever. I don't know.
I wouldn't let that guy on a second time, and they've let him on scores of times. And they're like posting on their Facebook page of what should we do about Whit? I mean, that's kind of like to me. That's like yeah. To me, that's like, you know, what should I do about my abusive boyfriend who beats me up? And then I keep seeing him. What should I do about it? Leave him. What should you do about Whit? Don't take his calls. Actually, what I suggested was charging him for ad time, selling
there
him
you
ad
go,
time.
By you know? The minute.
Yeah. Or just say, hey, Whit, we're tired of giving you free airtime. Why don't you buy ads and, you know, and you can rant and like have Mark voice it so it sounds good. Because Whit is not only nuts, he has a really bad sounding cell phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unlistenable radio. I turn the channel. I turn Free Talk Live off when that guy comes on and forget to go back. Like literally, you know, they make
it's also personal beef. It's like it's sort of frustrating that he calls in and complains about things that he said or they said to him on previous calls.
Months ago. Like, yeah.
On so let's not talk about Whit. I'm ready to drop Whit. Can okay. we hang up on Whit?
Yeah,
all right.
Let's hang up on Whit. So here we are on psychcentral.com/blogs, 6 tips on how to make a good first impression. And it has a photo of an Asian woman looking like she's about to bow at you. Is that how you make a good impression? Say
maybe
namaste and put your hands together and pray to somebody.
I think namaste is Indian, isn't it?
Ah, okay. Yeah, but she looks like she's about to do that. I think she's Asian. It doesn't matter. Create a great greeting. This takes a little research in cultural competency and knowing who you will be greeting. Yeah, I'm just gonna end up making fun of all of this, Davi. I'm probably
yeah,
not
I know gonna, that's sort of what I'm saying. I mean, it's already kind of a failure because making a first impression usually means the other person is also making a first impression. So how do you already know to do research on them?
And yeah, and you know, basically, my feeling is. I've got enough friends, you know, if any of them die, I'll give people a call and I'll have a waiting list. Basically, I don't want any more. I don't want to meet any people.
Take a number. I carry around a deli counter number thing. Oh, you've got you've got my sixth impression here. You're number six.
I'm incredibly busy. And this sounds sociopathic or at least very narcissistic, but it's absolutely true. And maybe I'm narcissistic. I'm not sociopathic, but I don't really have time for somebody who can't do something for me.
Mm.
You know,
that makes sense. I mean, like even if it is a social situation, like having a person to socialize with is valuable too. If you're not even a good conversationalist, then you're kind of just eating up my time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, but for me, my main thing is I want to get as much Liberty Media made as I can and get it out there in the world and have it stick around, because I could die anytime, and, you know, I'm not going
to... Maybe we should reverse this article. What are 6 tips to make a good last impression?
How about six points on why should you bother even making a good first impression? You know, check this out. I spent my teens believing I would be dead and famous by 30. That was kind of a goal, you know, and I kind of followed that path. And unlike most people who had that goal, I actually had a really, really, really good rock band. So, you know, I kind of had a chance at it. And I actually got signed to Warner Brothers. And, you know, we were our own worst enemies and ended up not being famous. But for a minute there, it looked like we were going to be. And really, it was more about the music than about me being famous. I got to go along for the ride, but I really wanted to make great music and make something lasting. You know, I mean, there's records by people who are dead that I love, and I can't name a person on the record. It's like the music is what lives on. And I wanted to make a lasting impression of something great in the world. And that was my goal.
And well, it's still your goal. It's still my goal.
It still is.
When I was a kid, I wanted to either die at 27 or 81. And I think I've chosen 81.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is the same goal. It is still that I want to leave. What did Kurt Cobain say? It's better to burn out than to fade away.
He didn't say that.
That's like the title of his autobiography or something, isn't it?
He didn't write an autobiography. Somebody grabbed a bunch of his half scribbled notes and put them into a book.
No, before that.
No.
All right, hang on.
He didn't write an autobiography. That's a Neil Young line. It's better to burn out than to fade away.
It's a song.
Hey, hey. This is the story of Johnny Rotten. The king is gone, but he's not forgotten.
No, you know what it is? It is that also, but it is also quoted in Kurt Cobain's suicide note.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, which who knows if he wrote. You know, I will never kill myself. I will never murder anybody. I will never go on a spree. But no matter what happens, I don't have a need to leave a manifesto. My life is a manifesto. You know, my RSS feed of my torrents is my manifesto. I don't need to like leave some lasting note.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I don't have time in my life to organize my manifesto. When I die, I hope there are people enthusiastic enough about figuring me out that they'll wade through all the stuff I left behind in my wake to figure it out.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason I put everything out Creative Commons. So there'd be no problem of making the documentary. I don't need a documentary film made of me. I've already made it. Everything I've done is, you know, I like that. That's almost a quote. It's like, I don't need to leave a manifesto. My life is a manifesto. But yesterday, having lightning strike 25 feet away from my wife and I really made me think about how, you know, you don't really get to, unless you kill yourself, which I'll never do, you don't get to choose when you go out. It could happen anytime. And, you know, people always talk about making projects bus proof, which is like you open source them. So if the guy who came up with it gets hit by a bus, you know, like Bitcoin became bus proof shortly after, you know, before Satoshi even disappeared. Like, he's not necessary for it anymore. And that's the kind of things I want to do. And I was half joking about open sourcing the Freedom Fiends to where there could be like 30 shows called the Freedom Fiends. I think that'd be funny. I don't know if I'm ready.
Well, you couldn't stop it if someone tried. There's another Free Talk Live, and Free Talk Live has never done anything about it.
There was a Free Talk Live, and it was
they killed themselves, right?
It was a racist white power show, and I believe the guy killed his girlfriend and then killed himself.
Well, that just shows you the sort of mentality of intellectual property thieves.
Or ones that are too stupid to not come up with their own name for something, but I guess then they're not really thieves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the one that survived. I'm glad that this is the Free Talk Live that didn't kill himself.
Yeah. Well, I made a documentary about Hubert Selby Jr., the author of Last Exit to Brooklyn and It'll Be Better Tomorrow, who is a great unsung or, you know, undersung American writer. I mean, he is as great as Bukowski, and not many people have heard of him. You know, he's kind of in the same bookshelf as Bukowski. He's the same type of writer. And, you know, it was a bit of a challenge. I worked with his family, you know, to his widow, to make that movie. And I still ran into all sorts of usage rights with things. And I don't want to leave anyone usage rights problems if they want to make something of my stuff after I'm dead or tomorrow, today. If I'm alive.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and I'm going to try to get Davi back. He disappeared, but we have Nathan, and Nathan, what's on your mind while I try to get Davi back?
I was just thinking that for a long time, since I watched so much Star Trek, I always used that as the basis for judging new shows and movies. And now that I think about it, like, I would try to, you know, like, if the show has a better plot than Star Trek, then it's worth watching. And if it's not better, then, you know, why bother? But
Hang on a sec. Davi, we got you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. We're talking about Star Trek with Nathan.
Well, I know
I can talk Star Trek all day.
All right. You guys talk Star Trek and feminism, and I'm just going to answer my fan mail.
You know, my favorite all-time episode of Star Trek happens to be a feminist episode. And the reason I like it is also because it's an intensely capitalist episode.
A lot of the episodes were considered really sexist because the way they portrayed the space babes.
Oh, and they're also totally racist. They assume that somebody is completely defined by the planet of their origin and not by the content of their character.
That's racist.
Which is really ironic because they had the first interracial kiss on television.
Yeah, but it was forced. It was the first, like, coerced interracial kiss that neither of them wanted to kiss, and the aliens made them do it for their entertainment.
Well, you got me there.
No, so my all-time favorite episode of Star Trek is an episode of Deep Space Nine, and I think it's called All for the Prophet, and I'm not really sure, but it's one of the Ferengi episodes, and it's the one where it's discovered that the Grand Nagus's financial advisor is a woman, and this is a scandal, and it's because on the Ferengi planet, and Ferengi are sort of the nasty communist caricatures of capitalists. But on the Ferengi planet, women are not allowed to earn profit. Women are not allowed to own property. In fact, women aren't even allowed to wear clothes. So the fact that this woman wears clothes, impersonates a man, and gives financial advice to who is essentially the prophet pope of the Ferengi is this huge scandal. But in the end, they accept her because she's more profitable than the other advisor. And that just proves that the profit motive actually usurps racist and sexist tendencies.
Excellent.
That's interesting because to me, I always thought the message there was kind of that Michael Moore line of, well, if you give a capitalist enough rope, he'll just hang himself. Or like if you can buy the rope to hang himself or something. I kind of got that impression. Like these libertarian aliens, they're so stupid that they'll let women, you know, do whatever just because it's more profitable at the moment. Kind of a thing.
But see, that's just the point. Like, the point is that these are socialists writing nasty caricatures of capitalists, and even they can't sustain the idea that the capitalist would encourage or sustain prejudice. You see what I mean? Like, even in their fantasies, capitalists can't remain prejudiced.
Well, that's a good point. They did get a lot more, I guess I can't say humanized, but they became more three-dimensional as the series went on. Whereas in the beginning, they were straight-up caricatures of libertarians and capitalists who only concerned was how they could profit or exploit or scam someone in any given situation.
So what was your question, Nathan? What were you calling in about?
Oh, actually, I didn't get to complete my initial thought, which was they visit San Francisco a lot on Star Trek, and I'm surprised you never commented on that because they seem to love it for some reason.
Even on the remakes, what's the one where they go to San Francisco and they say something about LSD, but Spock calls it LDS?
Oh, that's the movie, Star Trek 4. Yeah. And the one earlier I mentioned that. Do what? Well, the one earlier that I mentioned where they find the militia who talks about gun rights, that one was the Voyager one where they go to San Francisco. Each series has one.
Oh, yeah, they go back in time. They go back in time to San Francisco in the 70s and they get wrapped up with a militia group.
No, that's present day.
And there's also an original Star Trek, the TV show, where there's sort of a gun rights thing where Captain Kirk has to build a shotgun out of found things. Remember that one?
Oh,
to defeat
the lizard people.
Yeah.
Yeah. They actually brought that guy back for the fifth series, which shall not be named, but for a little nostalgia, they brought him back.
I think it's because Starfleet Academy is in San Francisco. And so that's always that's always the place that they visit Earth on, unless it's France. Picard is from France, but
I really like Picard's. I like that actor sort of playing a weird version of himself in American Dad.
Yeah, that is kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So getting back to feminism, have you guys ever heard of something called the Bechdel test?
No. Oh yeah, it's whether there is a character in a movie, if a movie has a character that's a woman who's a main character and you know her name. Is that it?
That's one out of three.
Yeah, I actually know the woman that's based on, that cartoonist from San Francisco. Anyway, we'll be back.
We'll have to find out on the next break.
Yep.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Freedom Fiend. And we got Davi back. And we got 2-for-1. We got Nathan here, too. Nathan is calling in about something. What you got there, Nathan?
I got some feminism, and I got the Bechdel test.
All right. Give me the feminism first.
Well, it's a feminist Bechdel test. It's basically a test to tell if a movie is gender normative or gender equality. I guess that's the idea. So there are three criteria. There have to be two female named characters. That's number one. And number two, they have to speak to each other. And number three, the conversation has to be about something unrelated to men.
Yeah, it's basically a test to see how women are portrayed in movies, whether they are simply window dressing or actually characters. And I think
Glenda asking Dorothy if she's a good witch or a bad witch.
Basically, yes. Remember that.
I think this is a good thing. You know, I wouldn't. And there's another test that's related as to whether or not there are any main gay characters, which. I don't know. I don't think I'd need to put a gay character into something, but I would definitely need to put a female character who has some depth into something I wrote. And I think that it's a good test to point out that Hollywood movies are often very one-dimensional in their portrayal of the other half of humanity, of females. I don't think there needs to be laws to enforce this, or I don't think people should boycott movies that don't have this. I think, you know, you just vote with your wallet, and there's a good point to it. And the interesting thing, this is named after Alison Bechdel, who's a lesbian cartoonist. I actually know her from San Francisco. We were kind of buddies when I lived there, and went to the same place and hung out a lot. I'll just say that. And we talked a lot.
Does it count if it's a Monty Python movie and both of the women are played by men?
Probably not.
Well, men used to play women in theater, so maybe.
Yeah, I don't think Monty Python does that for that reason. I think they do it because it's really funny to see John Cleese in a wig and fake boobs.
Yeah, I think that's who was in the troupe.
Oh, not John Cleese. John, yeah. Anyway, those guys.
So the example
sounds like it would not be a hard test to pass. Maybe I'm just not used to asking this question. That's
the point. You'd be surprised. Run some movies through it, and probably 4 out of 10 Hollywood movies fail it.
Well, Star Wars? Wouldn't Star Wars fail it?
Well, I guess there aren't a lot of female characters in Star Wars.
Yeah, right, and so when there are, they're kind of like space aliens in bikinis who have one line tops, and they're just dancing.
Yeah, just name like a couple movies off the top of your head.
What about X-Men, right? Like there's more than one female mutant, and there's not a lot of like romance.
Does she talk to other women, though? She probably only talks to the other X-Men.
See, that's the thing. I would have to rewatch all of these movies with this question in mind. I can't like...
Yeah, like you...
Every conversation
or
in the
you
film.
Can just take Nathan and my word for it in the same way that you could just...
interrupt it. It's like an all-female cast.
In the same way that you could just take my word for it that Stefan Molyneux, when he's condemning the hero's journey, is existing in the hero's journey.
He's using the hero's journey to condemn the hero's journey.
Yeah, and he doesn't.
I guess that would make it axiomatic.
He doesn't realize it. Yeah, axiomatic.
So the example that I wanted to bring up is a bit of a funny one. So Lord of the Rings miserably fails this test because the women in it don't, in the books they hardly talk, and in the movies they talk, but they don't actually talk to each other.
Are they named? I can't think of a named female character.
Well, there are three female named characters, Arwen, Eowyn, and Galadriel, but they hardly speak in the books, and they speak a little more in the films, but they don't actually talk to each other. They just talk to other men. But the interesting thing is that Tolkien had a kind of an encyclopedia of myths and poems called the Silmarillion.
Well, Mary's kind of a girl.
Do what?
Mary is kind of a girl.
Which one?
Hobbit. There's a hobbit named Mary, and he's a boy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So in the Silmarillion, there are actually two mythical female characters that talk to each other, and they talk about Aman, which is a holy land of the afterlife, but it's spelled A-M-A-N. So they talk about Aman.
Excellent stuff, man. Good. Thank you for your call, sir.
Good night.
Worms.
Hi, Nathan.
Yep. So
thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service in the Liberty mission. So, yeah, man, the Bechdel test, I will put that in the show notes. And let's go back to our...
For me, am I going to like look for this in every movie I ever watch from now?
Yeah, yeah. Between the Bechdel test and the hero's journey explanation, in two nights, we've ruined movies for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that is sort of the point of a lot of like leftist agendas, is to ruin everything that I enjoy.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, like, the Bechdel test could kind of sound like a leftist agenda, but I know Alison Bechdel, and she's such a sweet dyke, man. She's not a man hater at all.
It's like a reasonable test. It seems like it should obviously, like it should work. It should be common. Like Voyager passes.
And she loves cats, man. Her comic strip is about her and her freedom fighter cat that she's trying to always talk out of doing violent things to property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, I'd kind of like to make a blatant statement that cat lovers are all doing the best with what they have.
Should we call her up? It's probably still early enough in San Francisco. She's probably in the phone book. Let's call Alison Bechdel up and get her on here and turn her into an ANCAP.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about it because I don't know enough films. I haven't watched enough films with this in mind to be able to comment. I mean, I can think of movies with more than one female character that sit around talking to each other. But maybe it's not that common. Like, I mean, there are like ones where it obviously fails, right? Like Warm Bodies fails. It's a romantic comedy. There's two girls and they sit around talking about the boy.
Yeah.
But, you know, what if you reversed it? How many movies are there? Well, I guess it'd be a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, you hear
this. All right, point taken. This seems like a decent test. I mean, as a writer, I'm definitely going to keep this in mind.
Yeah, yeah. And you, when you think about... You know, you hear the test and you go, that's ridiculous. And then you start going through movies and you're like, this movie has a woman. And then you're like, yeah, but she only talks to other men. And you're like, but wait, this movie has two women. And you're like, yeah, but they're sitting around talking about the men.
You know what, though? If you surveyed all the conversations of all the human beings on the planet, I'll bet that women sit around talking about men more than men sit around talking about women.
You know what people mostly talk about? Food. The way I know this is I used to have a broken portable TV. I used to have a portable TV set. It was a little like, this is in 1996. I had a battery operated TV, like a camping TV for people that want to go camping and, you know, have to bring the world with them. Mm-hmm. And to tune it, it didn't click from station to station. It just was a smooth dial like a radio. And if you went all the way down to the far left past channel two, there was a little space there where early cell phones, you know, before they were encrypted and digital, I could pick up any cell phone within two or three blocks of me. And I lived at Bush and Powell in San Francisco, which is a pretty busy district. And, you know, there were, you know, it's right. It's there's a bunch of, you know, red lights and busy streets right around there. So there were people in their cars on their cell phones talking. All they talked about was food, man. 95% of the conversations were, what are we going to get for dinner? Oh, that was a great dinner last night. Oh, what are you going to pick up at the store? Oh, I really have a hankering for some blah, blah, blah. People just talk about food. It's pretty disappointing.
That's well, I mean, I guess we do spend a lot of our time eating food, so that kind of makes sense. I mean, a lot of our social gatherings are also about food, like eating for lunch or meeting for coffee.
Do you think there's some NSA guy whose job is to monitor LRN? I'll bet there is by now, and I'll bet he's sitting in his cubicle going, man, you're speaking the truth. He's going, Michael, worms, man. Yeah, people just talk
no
about
way.
Food.
He's sitting there thinking that food is code for something and trying to figure it out. He thinks it's an acronym, or he thinks it's like code for some operation.
People do use really,
and I'm not denying that it is.
You know, it's really funny with like encrypted communication easily available to the average person now. How mm-hmm. many people get busted for really stupid things? You know, like I read in the Casper paper a couple weeks ago about some meth ring they'd broken up, and it said in the article that you know, they'd obtained a warrant to tap the phones of so-and-so, and that they were using code that was like, you know, grandfather was a gram of speed, a teenager was a 16th of an ounce of speed. Like, they had this bonehead, you know, kindergarten code, and they were speaking on open cell phone lines about it, believing that would protect them from getting arrested.
Well, I mean, isn't that where a lot of drug slang comes from anyway? I mean, it's because, like, to entrap someone, you have to get them to say on the record what it is that they're actually doing, right? And so you come up with slang so that the cops can't sort of get you on the record committing a transaction.
Yeah. I'm sure there are people out there trading drugs over encrypted channels who don't get arrested, and they're a little bit smarter than the average bear.
I mean, I don't do drugs and I don't sell drugs, but if I did and somebody came to me and they like said very clearly the like name of the chemical that they wanted to buy, like, that screams fed to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to like say it jokingly out loud, and then I realized, like, you know, the guy at the NSA will probably edit it and use it against me. If I say, yes, sir, I would like to purchase a gram of blah, 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 blah. Oh, no, that's the new code. Blah, 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 blah. Cops.
I haven't tried that particular substance.
Cops. Yeah, man. So let's go back to this 6 tips on how to create a good first impression.
Yeah, can we do it backwards?
Yeah. We'll make fun
let's
of
stop,
it backwards.
Let's start at the bottom, because I think that's the only one that really is good. And it's be genuine. There's nothing worse than having an encounter with really fake person. And it's funny, yeah, because the rest of this article is sort of telling you to be fake. But I think that is maybe the only piece of good advice.
Have you ever read the book How to Influence Friends, How to Win Friends and Influence People?
No, I haven't.
It was a book from like the 1920s that's still popular. It was kind of the first self-help book. Probably, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's people saying, accept the Bible, but no, it's the first, like, you know, modern self-help book that was a bestseller. And it's written by Dale Carnegie, who's no relation to the Carnegies, the steel people. Although he let people believe he was, he didn't correct them, allegedly, when they said, oh, are you related to the steel magnate?
People believe I'm related to Clive Barker. Why not?
Is that the sci-fi writer? Or no?
He wrote horror. He's the guy who created Pinhead.
Yeah, I think one of the guys in Ministry is named Barker.
Yeah, maybe. I think I actually am related to Clive Barker.
You'd like to be, or you think you are?
No, I think that I am. I think this was an assignment in like elementary school. Figure out who you're related to.
Yeah, Paul Barker. Paul Barker is the bass
maybe
player.
I'm related to him too.
Yeah. We'll be back with the final how to be genuine on the Freedom Fiends.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Have you ever wanted to move to the land of LibPair? Libertarian paradise, where there's fun for everyone that doesn't initiate force on others, fun for the kids, parties for the adults, buy and sell in silver or Bitcoin, scenic hikes and gun shoots, speeches to educate us all. The Porcupine Freedom Festival is LibPair in the White Mountains of New Hampshire for a week this summer, June 22nd to 29th. Get your tickets now before there's no more room. Porkfest, the event of a lifetime. Porkfest.com. That's PORCFEST.com.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to
torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Yeah, this is the Freedom Fiends, last segment of the night. And the topic is black market babies, pro or con?
I'm in favor of black market babies.
You sound horrible. I just want to, you know, I've been trying to get this one thing in the whole show. I forgot to. My wife gave me a cake for my birthday. It was like a whole cheesecake, and she's on a diet, so she didn't eat any of it. So I ate a whole cheesecake in one sitting, and it came in a bag that she got at Walmart. It's like, you know, a birthday present bag. It has a picture of a squirrel on it in a birthday hat, and the squirrel is saying, "Go nuts! It's your birthday." It's awesome. All right, go on.
So were there nuts in the cheesecake? Black market babies shouldn't be a black market. You should be free to. Yeah, I don't know. It's an adoption question, right? It's like
when I lived in DC in the early '80s, there was a punk band called Black Market Baby. And they were really popular, and you know that was back when bands always had like harsh, shocking sounding names, and that was supposed to be a harsh, shocking sounding name because, you know. But think about how statist it is to consider that a shocking name. You know, I mean, it's like it's saying, "Oh, if it's not an adoption sanctioned by the government, it's bad. Then we're bad, so we're going to call our band something bad." But you know, I talked to a friend. I have a friend that is from England who lives in Vietnam, of all places. And I asked her what it's like, and she said, it's really weird because, you know, in some ways it's way more tyrannical than even England. Like in Vietnam, the gun control is so heavy. They will literally put you in front of a firing squad if you are caught in possession of one bullet, even without a gun, just you have a bullet, they'll shoot you. That's ironic. However, if you want to adopt, you just do it. You don't need to go through the government. Like, let's say, you know.
So that's how it used to be. It used to be you could, like, come across a kid on the road. Like, if you're, like, in a medieval town or something and somebody's parents died of plague or something, you just find a kid. And the kid's like, "I got nobody." And you're like, "All right, you're our son now."
Yeah.
And that was, like, nobody kept the records, right? So this comes up because when I see people out protesting abortion clinics, my first thought is, well, rather than spending all your money on this campaign to like end abortion, why don't you pay that woman and adopt her kid?
Yeah. And so what you're going to do is you're going to go to the abortion debate at Porkfest and you're going to offer to buy babies for one Bitcoin, right?
I don't know if I'm going to do that, but I do think that people should be free to do that. And I would, and I'm even to the point that I would like to see that happen. Like if there were somebody in the liberty movement who was considering getting an abortion, I would really like to see those people who are pro-life or at least sort of like libertarian pro-life say to them, "Hey, you know, I'll pay you to bring that child to term if I can have it."
Yeah, I think Bitcoin would be a good acid test for it, too. If somebody has Bitcoin, they'll probably make a good parent, or at least better chance than if they don't have any Bitcoin, because it means they have, you know, at least have some money, which you need to raise a kid, and they're into Bitcoin, which means they're cool, because only cool people are into Bitcoin.
Yeah. Being at Porkfest is probably a good acid test, too.
Yeah, and, you know, if they had cats, too. If you have a cat, how about, like, one Bitcoin and one cat for your baby?
There you go. I'm just tired of arguing about this stuff. Like these third rail topics like abortion or intellectual property or whatever, any issue that people sit around and argue about in the liberty movement. I'm tired of it. I want to see people taking their idea and putting it into action. You know, I want to see people actually taking it upon themselves to solve their problems the way they think those problems should be solved.
Well, I've put the intellectual property, being anti-intellectual property law, into action because for the past 12 years, I've made my living giving away media, basically. And, yeah. And not, you know, like putting Creative Commons license on everything so people can do whatever they want with it and still making money at it. But they don't have to pay for it.
This is the standard dispute that I have with L. Neal Smith. This is the way I settled the dispute with L. Neal Smith as far as I'm concerned. Is I said, hey, look, I'll tell you what. You charge $2 a signature on your certificate. There's about 100 signatures on the Shire Declaration. I'll put up $200 if you'll sit in a third-party arbitrated dispute and settle this the way libertarians say they like to settle things. And he's never taken me up on it.
Because you're a pimple on the butt of liberty, aren't you? Isn't that it?
Yep, that's right. I'm not even worth it. My thoughts are not even worth
it. All right. This has been the Freedom Fiends. And I say good wormrin to you, sir. Worms.
This has been your daily diet of worms.
Worms.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.